do we practically do to work for secession, independence and freedom? We are working towards a Cape of Good Hope and the right to self-determination. The right to self-determination is specifically mentioned in the Southern Constitution, section 235. Now, the moment you start talking about this, people say, no, but it's not constitutional, it's not legal. In fact, we had a South African leader, John Steenhuisen, actually say that the idea of secession is stupid and unworkable, and we proved that that wasn't true in a previous presentation on all the successful secessions in recent times. But it is mentioned in the South African Constitution. It's guaranteed by international law. International covenants on civil and political rights, the African Union Charter on Human and People's Rights, and the United Nations Charter, to all of which the Republic of South Africa is a signatory. We are obligated to adhere to this. Now, here are some of the legal documents recognizing the intrinsic right to self-determination. The right of self-determination of any community sharing a common cultural and linguistic heritage within a territorial entity of the Republic. The Cape fulfills all of the necessary criteria to achieve self-determination or independence. The United Nations Charter 1945, Chapter 1, Article 1, under Purposes and Principles. The purpose of the United Nations are to develop friendly relations among nations based on the respect for the principle of equal rights and self-determination of peoples, and to take other appropriate measures to strengthen universal peace. The United Nations, under self-determination, has the principle and law of declaration of the granting of independence to colonial countries and peoples. This is adopted by the UN General Assembly Resolution 1514 in the 14th December 1960. All peoples have the right to self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. Immediate steps shall be taken in trust and non-self-governing territories, or all other territories, which have not yet attained independence, to transfer all powers to the peoples of those territories without any conditions or reserves. In accordance with their freely expressed will and desire, without any distinction to race, creed, or colour, in order to enable them to enjoy complete independence and freedom. The International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights states, under Article 1, all peoples have the right of self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely pursue the economic, social, and cultural development. All peoples may, for their own ends, freely dispose of their natural wealth and resources without prejudice to any obligations arising out of international economic cooperation, based upon the principle of mutual benefit and international law. In no case may a people be deprived of its own means of subsistence. The state parties to the present covenant, including those having responsibility for the administration of non-self-governing and trust territories, shall promote the realization of the right of self-determination and shall respect that right in conformity with the provisions of the Charter of the United Nations. The African Union also has a Charter on Human and People's Rights. Article 20 deals with self-determination. All people shall have the right to existence. They shall have the unquestionable and inalienable right to self-determination. They shall freely determine their political status and shall pursue their economic and social development according to the policy they have freely chosen. Colonialized or oppressed people shall have the right to free themselves from the bonds of domination by resorting to any means recognized by the international community. All people shall have the right to the assistance of the state parties to the present charter in their liberation struggle against foreign domination, be it political, economic, or cultural. In summary, self-determination is determined and recognized by the South African Constitution, the African Union Charter on Human and People's Rights, the United Nations Charter, and international law, including the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. So if somebody says to you there's no legal basis for it, well, they obviously are just displaying their ignorance, they haven't studied the matter. There are other elements to self-determination which even further strengthen the case for independence. One is that if a country was formed through a union of previously autonomous states, there's a higher propensity for those states to reclaim independence. Think of Eritrea, which was forced into an alliance with Abyssinia and formed the country of Ethiopia after the Second World War, and Eritrea fought for years, to get its independence, and Eritrea is now, since 1991, an independent country. Now, we've got clear communities in the Western Cape, like Burkop, which is also known as the Malay Quarter, and prior to 1910, South Africa, or the Union of South Africa, the Republic of South Africa, did not exist. There was the Transvaal, the Orange Free State, the Cape Colony, Natal Colony, Lesotho, Botswana, and Swaziland. And after the Anglo-Boer Wars, the British Empire forced together these six autonomous entities within the borders of what they called the Union of South Africa. The Union of South Africa's newly formed borders included the two Boer republics, Transvaal and the Free State, the two British protectorates, Cape and Natal, the kingdoms of Swaziland, the kingdom of Lesotho, and the two British colonies, which of course was the Cape Colony and Natal Colony. In 1966, Lesotho gained their independence, and in 1968, Swaziland gained their independence and left the Union of South Africa. Most other British colonies in the world outside of South Africa have been granted independence. However, the Cape still remains locked into the colonial union, which was established by the old British Empire. We never had a referendum. The Cape people never had a chance to vote, do you want to be part of the Union of South Africa? Now, the Cape, remember, had its own parliament for many years, going back 150 years, long before the Union of South Africa, long before there was one habitation on what today you call Johannesburg or Pretoria. The Cape existed with its own parliament. The United Nations has recognized the need for colonial constructs to be removed. The damage of artificially constructed colonial borders has been felt throughout the African continent. And that's what we were fighting for in South Sudan, to get South Sudan independent from Sudan. The recent peaceful referendum for independence in South Sudan is a testament towards a trend towards self-determination. All over the world, territories are choosing self-determination, and there is now a group called the World Assembly of Nations Pursuing Self-Determination, which Cape Exit is part of. The Brexit referendum taken by the British people to be independent of the European Union is another example of this emerging movement of decentralization and of independence. There are numerous other nations preparing for secession right now. Nehemiah 2 verse 17 says, "You see the distress we are in. Our Jerusalem lies waste, and its gates are burned with fire. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem. We'll no longer be a reproach." Here we've got over a million books and irreplaceable first edition things being burned in the Jamison Hall. The library of the University of Cape Town, burnt on the 18th of April 2021. And you see the distress we're in. Jerusalem lies waste. Its gates are burned with fire. And we have had vast amount of destruction here. They try to say this was part of the wildfire, but that's not possible. The tree line around University of Cape Town was not breached by the fire. Most of the buildings around the Jagger Library in University of Cape Town are unaffected. The walls around Jagger Library still have green ivy on them. I said the day after the fire. The roof was not affected from the outside, it was from the inside. The gutters were clean off. So this idea that the fire came from the outside is nonsense. The fire started within the library, which was arson, obviously. And we've had so much arson in the Western Cape, especially in election years. The historic Christian principles of municipal rights have been eroded in recent years. For over 1,400 years, the Christian principles of municipal electors being elected by landowners and ratepayers provided stability and economic progress which blessed all and benefited all. However, today we have secular humanist globalists with their agenda of centralization, and they've created uni-cities where the blind lead the blind. Ratepayers and landowners are swamped by squatters and transient migrant workers who've had no investment in the area, and they are able to vote out the people who are residents who've built up the community. They've hijacked whole municipalities, looted its resources, turned communities which used to be safe and efficient. And just notice, by the way, in this old picture of Frederiksen Hospital, see how much forest there was around on the slopes of the mountain. Look on the slopes of Signal Hill, how much forest there used to be. They've turned these into degenerate crime zones. In Proverbs we read, "I went by the land and the field of the lazy man, by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles, its stone wall was broken down." This, by the way, is the Grand Hotel in Byra. in Mozambique. Not very grand anymore. It's been liberated. When I saw it, I considered well. I looked on it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler, and your need like an armed robber. Proverbs 24 describes how many municipalities today. If dirt and decay describe your municipality, then it's time to change the mayor and the town councillors. Crime and grime go together. Because of laziness, the building leaks. Through idleness of hands, the house leaks. I was at a meeting in Pylons where we had the head of the local police station there speak to us about the first murders that had occurred in Pylons ever. We hadn't had murders there for something like a century, and suddenly some old people had been murdered. And when the policeman was asked, what did you notice was common between the two homes where these murders occurred? And he said, the gardens were neglected, the houses were decayed, they obviously weren't being cared for well. And so I asked the question, if that's true of those houses, isn't it true of suburbs and communities too? That when we see a municipality in decay, graffiti, litter, and no care taken in the community, that's also an open invitation to crime. And he agreed, but the town councillor said he found that an insult. Well, you know, it is an insult, but the town councillors are failing. He who is slothful in his work is brother to him as a great destroyer, we read in Proverbs 18:9. Proverbs 22, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul. Do not be one of those who shakes hand in a pledge, one of those who has a surety for debts. For communities to be strong, their families need to be strong. For city councils to be good, their citizens need to be good. Now I remember as a 12-year-old, I was sick for the first time, taken to hospital, had kidney stones, and I was in the Bulawayo Central Hospital, and I remember seeing the nurses kneeling in prayer at the beginning of their shifts. I mean, when did you last see nurses kneeling in prayer at the beginning of their shifts? Has anyone ever seen that? I mean, it depends how old you are. I'm giving away my age now, aren't I? Those who cannot control themselves are not capable of ruling over a city, we read Proverbs 16:32. A nation of sheep breeds a government of wolves. The problem with socialism, Margaret Thatcher said, is eventually you run out of other people's money. Those who cannot manage a household well are not qualified to lead others, you read in Timothy. Our Lord Jesus taught that whoever desires to become great amongst you, let him be your servant. Our Lord Jesus made it clear that civil authorities are to be public servants. It's for this reason that officials in civil government are called ministers or servants of God. Now this comes from Romans 13. In fact, the word is deacon. That the government is to be a deacon of God, to be a minister of God, a servant of God. And this is why we have the whole concept of a minister in government. The word here is deacon. And just as a minister in the church is a minister of grace, a minister in government is to be a minister of justice. They both serve both God and man. The concept that civil government is to be a servant of its citizens is a uniquely Christian concept. It originates from these verses from the words of our Lord Jesus. Hence the concept of a cabinet minister and a prime minister. Prime minister means first servant. I still remember cabinet ministers wrote to me signing the letters to your humble servant. I've still got these letters on file. Minister of one or the other, home affairs, foreign affairs, so on. Your humble servant, they'd sign their letters. I don't think they know what humility is anymore, nor how to be a servant. When I was growing up, city councillors and members of parliament were not actually paid for their services. They received only basic expenses. They needed to have real jobs to sustain themselves. For example, my history teacher in high school, Mr. Rhys Davies, was a member of the Rhodesian Parliament. And he wasn't absent from school often. Parliament only met a few weeks of the year. I remember asking him, sir, how is it possible that you're a member of Parliament and a teacher? He said, we don't get paid for being members of Parliament. We need a real job too. Well, how different is that? And I remember him saying they received free train tickets to get from Bulawayo to Parliament in Salisbury, but if they wanted to fly, it was at their own expense. And I learned when I first came to South Africa in the 1970s that that was true here too. If a member of Parliament wanted to travel between Cape Town and Pretoria or Joburg, he wanted to fly, he'd have to pay for that himself. He'd only get a free train ticket. At that time, the kind of people who offered themselves for public service as town councillors, members of parliament, tended to be successful job providers in the community. They donated their time to the city council to legislative duties. When have you last seen a head of state travelling by bicycle to work? Ian Smith was seen cycling to work in Salisbury on occasion. Certainly entering politics at that time was not a get-rich-quick scheme. Civil servants were sacrificing time and talents for the common good. I saw Ian Smith multiple times in the last 20 years of his life. He lived a very humble life. He did not have wealth. His farm was even stolen from him by the government when Mugabe did his so-called farm land invasions or farm reform, land reform, and which was nothing but farm invasions. He didn't enrich himself. He was a poor man, and he lived in relative poverty his whole life. So that's the way it used to be. Members of Parliament, he was so principled that if he was travelling to his farm, he'd use his own car. He would not use the government-provided car, and he'd fill his own car up with his own petrol. He wouldn't use the government vehicle if he was going on a private business. I heard the same thing from the bodyguard of P.W. Botha, a friend of ours, Scott Pascal. He said, when P.W. Botha went to church or to the farm or anything, he used his own vehicle, filled up the tank with his own money. He would not use a government vehicle for private purposes. He's that scrupulous. Do you think we've got ministers in government like that today? Today, unfortunately, it seems that to too many, in what is meant to be public service, they see it as an opportunity for self-serving criminals to loot public resources. The African Union reports that over 32% of the total gross domestic product of Africa is looted every year by government corruption. Stolen. What's the difference between the ANC government and organized crime? Organized crime is organized. What's the difference between the mafia and the ANC? The mafia turns a profit. What's the difference between the ANC-led government and the Titanic? When the Titanic went down, all the lights were on. This means a third of the total wealth of Africa is stolen by so-called civil servants. That's 10 times more than all foreign aid to Africa combined. Can you imagine how much money that is that they're stealing? A government which lays taxes on a people not required by urgent public necessity and sound public policy is not a protector of liberty, but an instrument of tyranny. It condemns the citizens to servitude. Slavery is another word. And that's an American president, Calvin Coolidge. You've probably not heard of him, because he's one of the best presidents of America. He didn't tax his people. He said his main job was to keep government off people's backs. He said the business of America is business. And so his job as government wasn't to keep insecurity in people's lives, but to keep Congress off the backs of the citizens so they could get on with their lives without government interference. That's not considered good government. A good leader is one who makes lots and lots of laws and wars. This is a man who didn't cause any wars and who didn't pass a lot of laws. He, in fact, just vetoed just about everything Congress tried to come out with. Some people have tried to say corruption does not hurt anyone. Do you remember we had a president saying corruption doesn't hurt anyone? Well, actually, corruption steals from absolutely everybody. It chases away tourists, it chases away investors, it chases away job creators, it devalues your currency. When Mandela became president in 1994, 1 rand was worth $2. Now, when I was growing up in the 1970s, 1 rand equaled $2. It took $2 to buy a rand. The rand was twice as powerful as the dollar. I remember when the rand was more powerful than the British pound. I remember the Rhodesian dollar was much stronger than the British pound and the Rhodesian and the American dollar and the German Deutschmark. But when Mandela became president, because of years of sanctions, war, disinvestment, riots, the rand had devalued to 2 rand to the dollar. Now it's 19 rand to the dollar. So under the ANC, the money's been devalued so badly. My first motorbike, 1981, cost 1,000 rand. 1,000 rand could buy a motorbike in 1981, and that was a good, brand new 250cc off-road Honda XL motorbike. By 2000, 1,000 rand could only buy a bicycle. I bought a bicycle for 1,000 rand at the year 2000. And then, now, you couldn't even buy a pair of running shoes for 1,000 rand. It'd be more like 4,000 rand for a pair of good running shoes today. So it's gone from motorbike to... Now, 1,000 rand today won't even fill your petrol tank unless you've got a very small car and a small petrol tank. I remember when 5 rand would fill your petrol tank. And now, 100 rand won't even get your petrol out of the empty. The evil needle would probably not even move. So that is stealing from everybody. It reduces the value of everybody's savings, earnings, and pensions. It erodes and implodes any economy. Corruption, more than any other single cause, is responsible for most of the poverty and joblessness in society. The biggest cause of all of our problems in this country is corruption. Corruption is the number one problem. It's what's stolen from everyone, stolen from our pensions, devalued our currency, chased by investors, led to unemployment and all the rest. But what can we do about it? Many people say there's very little they can do about all this. Actually, there's a lot that each one of us can actually do practically. First of all, we need to rediscover the Christian work ethic and the biblical principles for Africa. We should be studying what the Bible teaches in economics and free enterprise and honest money and biblical solutions to crime. There are biblical commands to the nation, biblical principles, political principles and the teachings of Christ. There are biblical solutions to crime that we could apply. How we can be salt and light, how we can apply the Lordship of Christ to all areas of life. That's a subject of the Biblical Principles for Africa book. Education is foundational. The philosophy of education in this generation will become the philosophy of government in the next generation, which is frightening considering what they're teaching in the schools today. Woke gender confusion, transgender insanity and all that. So what's going to happen, the politics of the next generation? Secondly, we can all do something to reclaim and restore our communities. So the first principle is information. Just think of the book of Nehemiah. The gates have been burned with fire, the walls have crumbled, the society's in ruins. What's the first thing Nehemiah does? He gets the information, he researches the facts. Then there's intercession, and then there's involvement and implementation and investment. So the book of Nehemiah shows you, in the example of Nehemiah, how to rebuild the ruins of a society that's gone wrong. The biblical principle that each community has the God-given right and responsibility to elect their own leaders from their own people. This right was established during the evangelization of Europe over 14 centuries ago. The principle of municipal rights. This has been recognized in the common law of England, established under Dooms of King Alfred, which was based upon upon the law of Moses. The dooms of King Alfred begin, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of bondage, out of the house of slavery in Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me. And one after the other, it gives the Ten Commandments and the case laws of Exodus, and then some of the Sermon on the Mount of Lord Jesus. That's the common law of England, established by the dooms of King Alfred. And in Magna Carta, the Great Charter, 1215, the first statute, the first written limitation on the powers of government. The English Bill of Rights of 1689. And the foundational statutes. These are foundational principles. No taxation is lawful unless it has been approved by the representatives of the class and community who are being taxed. No taxation without representation. That's what the American War of Independence began with. The right for every community to govern themselves and to determine who is to be entrusted with the stewardship of their resources. This has been foundational for over a millennium of Christian civilization. By the way, if you're wondering, this is the town hall in Bulawayo, and this is Main Road in Salisbury. You see the distress we are in, how Jerusalem lies waste, its gates are burned with fire. Let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach, no longer be in disgrace. Those of us who are old enough remember a time when our communities were clean and neat and safe and attractive. When I was growing up, we had no knowledge of, we had no need for high walls, barbed wire or razor wire fences, no electric fencing, no security gates, no burglar bars, no motion sensors, no steering locks, armed response companies. These concepts were unknown and unnecessary. This is what Jamison Avenue, now Samora Machel Avenue, looked like back in the 70s in Rhodesia. It doesn't look like that now in Zimbabwe, that's for sure. I never needed to worry about finding myself locked out of my home because the front door was seldom locked. It was only locked at night. And even if it was locked, you could always walk out the back door, which would always be open. Had the back door ever been locked, which I don't remember, you could have climbed through the window because we never had burglar bars when I grew up. And this is Selborne Avenue that I walked down to school every day in Bulawayo, and you could walk down in the shade, not seeing a piece of litter the whole time. It's completely safe. Your parents didn't have to drive you to school. You could walk to school. It was safe. The parents were not irresponsible. I don't think my parents drove me to school more than a couple of times in my whole life. It was safe to catch the bus across town or the train or walk the cycle across town, which I did many a time. Today, parents would be thought derelict in their duty. They'd be thought of as irresponsible if they'd allow their children the kind of freedom that we had growing up. I was at a meeting that the clerk was speaking at in 2014, I should say. They were celebrating 20 years of freedom in South Africa. And the clerk asked, I was there because my daughter was singing in the Cape Town Youth Choir, who the born frees? Well, I immediately raised my hand, and I'd people around me, no, trying to pull my hand down. I was born free. I was born where I could walk freely everywhere. Now, the people born behind burglar bars and security gates, whose parents have to shepherd them across town or whatever, they call the born frees? I mean, how bizarre is that? Now, I was born free. When I was just 12 years old, I remember putting on my bush knife, putting on my bush hat, taking my water bottle and walking to Kami Ruins. That's about 20 kilometers outside of Bulawayo on a Saturday alone. And Kami Ruins, I looked on a map, that's 20 kilometers. I walked out to Kami Ruins and explored it and came home. And my parents never asked me. I mean, I remember imagining what Kami Ruins looked like back when it was an ancient civilization. Absolutely fascinating for a youngster. And I had that freedom. On the way to Kami Ruins, I remember seeing zebra, kudu, giraffe, rhinos, wildebeest. This isn't in a game reserve. This was just beyond the city limits. That was normal. This was not in a game park. And my parents didn't know where I was wandering, and they didn't need to know. I just had to be home before the sunset. And that was while a country was at war. I had that much freedom while we were in a country at war. I was freer and safer in a country at war than we are today in a time of peace in a civilized country, like even in the city of Cape Town. Our children today, who are often called born free, know little or nothing about such freedom. Now children are being targeted by drug dealers, rapists, pedophiles, and children are in danger of being mugged on the way to school and sold drugs at school. In fact, it's kind of funny, we've got a school just across the road here that has a big sign, drug-free zone. And I've visited there and seen the kids lining up for their Ritalin. I mean, every morning, line up for your Ritalin. This is a drug-free zone. Come get your derivative of cocaine right here. And, I mean, this is how they prepare kids for a lifetime of drugs. And this happens in drug-free zones. The amount of hypocrisy in our schools today. To a large extent, the reason for the drastic deterioration in our local communities has come from the secular humanist worldview, the news media, the entertainment industry, which has been undermining the Christian foundations. You came from nothing. You're going nowhere. Life is meaningless. I mean, that's the essence of evolutionism. A whole lot of time and a whole lot of nothing made everything. Once upon a time, there was nothing. And that nothing became something. That something became everything. And if you don't believe that, then you're a right-wing fundamentalist, fanatic, extremist. And because evolutionism is just the belief that everything evolved out of nothing and then turned into self-replicating bits of dinosaurs and all that. And you meant to believe this without question. And they've been promoting and glorifying situation ethics, violence, glamorizing crime. This is what Hollywood's doing these days. This is what's in the movies. And we're surprised why society's in such a mess. But it's also, to a large extent, been the inevitable result of the amalgamation of municipalities and the centralization of power in uni-cities. If you wonder why education is in such a mess, this is the face of the Minister of Education. You'll never guess what political party he belongs to. General Secretary of the Southern Communist Party is, or Blade Nzimani, is also the Minister of Higher Education. Just in case you wondered what's behind the education. Well, instead of local control of the municipalities and parental control of the schools, and it used to be that each municipality had their own police force to protect the interests and property of each municipality, we now have professional politicians who neither know about the community and they don't care, that's for sure. Rates and taxes have skyrocketed. Services have plummeted. You're paying more and more for less and less. The beautiful gardens and virgins of our suburbs have been allowed to decay and rot. Now they're more likely to be piles of rubbish than beautiful flower beds. The streets are now often strewn with rubbish, litter, graffiti. The countryside has been polluted and filled with plastic bags and broken glass. Litterbugs, loiterers, beggars, opportunistic thieves, gangsters prowl the streets, breaking into vehicles and homes, turning what used to be a close-knit community into areas resembling a war zone. Zoo-like bars over the windows, high electric and razor fences surrounding what used to be friendly neighborhoods. This isn't the way homes are meant to be. The cities have low walls to keep the poodle in, or the hedgehog, and little gates, and you used to be able to go and visit your neighbours, and you didn't have to phone ahead of time, and you didn't have to wait the street ringing the bell. You'd go up to the door, walk onto the stoop, if not just walk straight in because the door might be open. I remember visiting Ed Smith's home, and the door was always open, always. And there was a Rhodesian Ridgeback dog lying over the hearth of the doorstep. You'd step over the dog, and you'd go straight in the home, because he'd often be sitting inside just saying, "Peter, come on in." And, I mean, this is the Prime Minister, no security, no burglar bars, no guards, and no fence, open gates, open front door. That's just normal. That's just the way we grew up. In addition to riots and irresponsible threats of white genocide, we've got people sing Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer songs, and people like Malema leading a whole stadium full of people with red berets and red t-shirts trying to kill, 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 shoot to kill, bah, bah, shoot to kill, kill the Boer, kill the Farmer, bah, 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 bah. And this is the Member of Parliament, the head of the political party. And what does this do? This drives down the value of the rand, the currency. It further impoverishes the entire population. It steals from everyone, chases away job creators. It's a disaster. And this is part of the protest outside Pretoria. They've got a whole lot, a copy of the whole lot of crosses with names of individual farmers who have been murdered on there. But Nehemiah 4 tells us, "Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome. Fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses." So what is needed if we are to reclaim and restore our communities? For God's honor and glory, and as faithful stewards of resources to serve our neighbors and to serve God's creatures, we should only allow ratepayers to vote in municipal elections. Municipal elections, the people who decide what to do with the money raised by rates and taxes should be the people who are the ratepayers. Only long-term residents who've excelled in serving the community should be eligible to stand as candidates for any municipality. It shouldn't be some kind of professional, get-rich-quick scheme gangster who's able to become the city councillor or the mayor. In order not to attract professional politicians and those with a looting mentality, there should be no salaries beyond basic expenses for town councillors and mayors. In fact, what I would like to see is, how about a law that requires all government ministers, cabinet ministers and members of parliament to send their children to government schools and to use government hospitals? I know that the Minister of Health does not use a government hospital. I know that the President doesn't go to a government hospital. They use private hospitals. And if you go to Zimbabwe, Mugabe never went to a Zimbabwe hospital. He flew to Singapore for medical care, or he'd come across the border to a private hospital here in Pretoria, but he would not go to a Zimbabwe hospital. That is not right. The people responsible for those hospital schools should be forced to use them. If you don't like your own product, then you're in the wrong job. So if a government leader doesn't support government hospitals and government schools, what is he doing in government? And I think, why not give the government ministers the same salaries as other civil servants? Members of Parliament should get the same salary as the policeman, teacher, fireman, and nurse. I mean, in fact, they probably deserve more. There should be no opportunities for civil servants to loot the resources so painstakingly built up by generations, by residents and ratepayers. You think of the phenomenal economy and agricultural economy built up in Rhodesia, which was then looted by ZANU-PF, who looted everything and left nothing for the citizens of the country and left the people more impoverished. When else in history have you had half the population of a country flee? That's voting with your feet, a vote of no confidence in the government, and 95% unemployment. In fact, in Zimbabwe by 2008, one brick cost more than every property, business, farm, and home combined in 1980. That's how bad inflation was. And they knocked 16 zeros off the currency, and still a $100 trillion note couldn't buy a half a loaf of bread in 2008. Now that's what a looting government can achieve. So number three, we need decentralization. It's absolutely essential. Each local community should have direct control over their own municipalities. The people who built the community and are paying the rates and taxes should be the people who determine what to do with it. Number four, every local municipality should be enabled to maintain their own local police force to protect their own interests and property of their community. Friends of mine in Mitchell's Plain say, why is it we don't have one single policeman in Mitchell's Plain who speaks our language? Not one. There are coloured policemen who speak Afrikaans, but all the police we've got in Mitchell's Plain are from Eastern Cape. They speak Khoisan, they don't speak Afrikaans, they don't speak our language, they don't care about the community, and they're being paid off by the gangsters, and they don't protect us. So why can't Mitchell's Plain have coloured policemen who speak Afrikaans from Mitchell's Plain protecting Mitchell's Plain? It makes sense. Why should Boerkop not have Muslim policemen from Boerkop, Malay people protecting Boerkop? Why is it that you've got to have foreigners pushed around? Because, you know, you wouldn't stand by as a policeman and see your uncle's store looted or your grandmother's home burned. And so if policemen come from that community and are answerable to that community and paid by that community, they will protect that community. Number five, no litter or pollution should be tolerated. In order to eradicate crime, the first priority should be to eradicate the grime that so often encourages it. When I grew up, I know that you'd get into such trouble if you dropped any litter. And by the way, the South African Army had the best way of dealing with litter. If somebody dropped any plastic, paper or something, pick it up with your teeth and eat it, digest it. You dropped a cigarette butt, pick the cigarette butt up with your teeth and chew it, digest it. If you dropped ash on the ground, lick it up. Literally. And you should see, you could tell guys who are in the army, they're sitting there and they'd be tipping the ash into their boot. And their socks, you could always recognize the smoker's socks on the washing lines because they've got all the ash there. But they learned not to litter. What better way of stopping litter than chew it, digest it, lick it up? And honestly, these people who just throw down junk everywhere and litter the place, that's a disgrace. That should not be tolerated. No littering, no panhandling, no beggars, no opportunistic thieves should be tolerated in any community. Number six, charitable work should be supported. Every opportunity should be given to care for those who are less fortunate through ministries like the Salvation Army and the Ark. Now, so often we actually harm people by our spontaneous, well-meaning charity. If I give money to somebody on the street, which I've done before when I didn't know more about it, I've seen people that I led to the Lord and who immediately after leading the Lord, can you give me 5 rand or lend me 5 rand or whatever. And next thing you know, this chap's lying dead drunk on the street a few hours later. So you learn, okay, we get them food. So you give the person some food. Go and buy a loaf of bread or pie and so on. Next thing, the man sells it on the street and uses it to buy drugs or alcohol. And if you stay on the streets long enough doing street evangelism, as I did in Hillbrow, you get to see this. So you start to learn, people need more than just charity. They need discipleship. They need evangelism. And if you put them into an evangelistic group, whether it's a local church or the Lord's Place or some YMCA, they are, then they will see that the charity is given with discipleship and evangelism and accountability. And as a result, the people will grow and be more responsible and benefit. And then you can see real progress. Parks for children must be carefully maintained. Should be kept clean and safe and protected from broken glass and drunkards and drug dealers and pedophiles. I've seen heroin needles in parks. In fact, when we go to a life chain, we go and organize a life chain, for example, at the waterfront at Burtoncrux Street on that island, I will get plastic gloves and a big black dustbin bag and walk around and pick up the rubbish before, and you can fill a whole dustbin bag just with litter. But I was shocked the last time to be finding literal heroin needle drugs, I mean, which any kid can pick up. We've got children coming to play there, not to mention a broken glass and other things like this. And this is just lying around strewn in public parks where children are meant to play. When I take my grandchildren to parks, the amount of times you see broken swings, broken everything, and the municipality knows because they put some red and white plastic tape or strip around it, just make it look ugly, and that's normally touching in a wing. So know that this is broken, but you can go there week after week and they haven't done a thing to repair it. What are they doing with all the rates and taxes? They don't care for our children or our communities. Municipalities must become drug-free and crime-free with zero tolerance for crime. No crime is acceptable. I remember going to meet the Minister of Law and Order, and the person at the time said to me, you find me in a very receptive mood, because there'd been some members of family murdered, and said, we are seriously considering bringing back the death penalty for serious murders, such as when government leaders are targeted. So a serious murder is not when a civilian like you and I are killed. It's when a government person is killed. Now that's a serious murder. You know, you get serious murders and you get not so serious murders, right? Well, I don't think any of us think like that, not if we're normal people, but this is speaking to a cabinet minister, and the person that's with me said, I noticed that we went through three layers of security to get to you. And these people have layers and layers and layers of security, VIP services, police and so on, and probably private security, and then they tell us that we shouldn't have means of self-defense and all that sort of thing. So it's seriously obnoxious. Number nine, municipalities must set a high priority on restoring the gardens, the verges, the traffic counts, and to beautify the inner cities, to reforest the suburbs, and to set up lights of public areas to discourage crime. The wicked do love the darkness. The better lit in areas, it does bring down crime, and of course, closer TV cameras ought to discourage criminals. Number 10, municipal taxes may only be used for the local community. The uni-city plundering of rates and taxes ostensibly to serve less privileged communities has proved to only be a cover for massive corruption on a colossal scale. Cape Town used to be better run when Cape Town was run as individual. Cape Town, when I grew up, was the place in front of Table Mountain, between the harbour and Table Mountain. That was Cape Town. This was not Cape Town. This was Rondebosch. Own municipality, own town council and so on. And Pines was another municipality. So was Parra and Atha. And they each had their own pride in their community and looked after it. And you could go and you'd see Parra, my, they really took care of the verges and the traffic islands, beautified rocks and flowers. And you could just see the effort that was put into each community. Each community controlled their municipality. And it was much better. And the moment it became a uni-city, I think of all the terrible things the ANC has done in this country, the uni-cities may be the worst. They destroyed the municipal control and pride and moved it so that instead of, I remember knowing the mayor of Pines, he went to our church. And remember, we knew the city councillor, this person lived there, and my daughter was friends with the son of that city councillor and so on. And we knew this, the town council. And we could walk from a home to the town hall and to the city council and speak to the people, the city clerk, and about issues, and things got dealt with. Now, you've got to go down to town, fight traffic, find parking, pay for parking, battle your way through all the muggers and everything else, and get to the wrong floor. Sorry, man of the key's not here. Wrong floor. Go there. Wrong paper. And now you get to run around the bureaucrats who just don't care. Well, maybe they do care. Maybe they enjoy themselves and are able to say, well, I wasted so many people's time today and I sent so many people back and forced people to redo this and wrong forms and all that. And maybe that's how they get their satisfaction these days, is by how they cannot serve the community. But this city does not work for you. When each local municipality administers their own taxes for their own areas, it'll bring down the burden on everyone. It'll make available far more for charity from person to person, congregation to congregation, community to community, responsible giving. That'll go along with restoration and upliftment. When the government says, give us more taxes, we'll care for the poor. They don't care for the poor, they care for themselves. And they enrich themselves and they loot the place and everything gets worse for everybody. If this was, when charity is going person to person, family to family, congregation to congregation, it's more efficient. The best way to restore pride and responsibility and ownership of residents and ratepayers is to give them back control of their own communities. One of the best things we could do is break up the uni-city back to real, genuine communities and municipalities, give back municipal control to the actual communities. We need to support political parties and municipal candidates who will work for self-determination and self-government with self-supporting, self-regulating municipalities. Families are the basic building block of society. It is of the highest priority to protect the family by protecting children from all the threats and bad influences. And yet we see a war against the family, a war against farmers, a war against food, a war against fuel, a war against freedom. What we see the government doing is trying to promote transgender cults and ideologies and create gender dysphoria in kids and promote perversion and prostitution and pornography. That isn't helping. And to promote sterilization by gender-affirming care where they castrate boys and have mastectomies for girls and make them effectively sterilized for life. And they call this gender-affirming care. It's nothing of the sort. It's child mutilation, it's genital mutilation, it's perversion, it's evil. And here you've got people who seem to think that mutilating kids is their God-given right, even though they don't believe in God, of course. So we need to protect the family. The family will do a better job of raising kids. Who loves your kids more, the government or you? Who's best to care for the children and raise the children and to oversee the teachers and textbooks that influence their children? The parents or the government? Some professional thieving, cocaine-sniffing drug addict, politician, Marxist, gender pervert? Does he love your children more? Is he more responsible with your kids than you are? This includes ensuring that loiterers, who often are drug dealers or pedophiles, are kept away from any community, particularly near schools and areas where children walk to and from their homes and their schools and sports, who walk to scouts and guides and youth groups. We used to be able to, in our communities, have our children leave home, walk to school, walk to scouts, walk to the shops and so on. My dad used to send me to the shop to buy things. And as, to show you how different our societies are now, when I went to the shop, my dad didn't need to give me money. I could go to the shop and say, my father wants me to, you know, 2 liters of milk and 2 loaves of bread and this and the other. And I didn't have to pay anything. I didn't have to sign anything. He put on a book for my dad to settle at the end of the month. No shaking of hand, no written agreement. It was just verbal understanding. I must have the authority of my dad, and my dad will settle the bill. And we did things like that. We didn't need to have signed and sealed and carved. And yet, immediately after 94, I remember being invited by Kenneth Mesher to Parliament. And I've been to Parliament a few times to enjoy lunch there and so on. So before, it used to be very underhand. You never saw money change hands, anyone having to sign anything. When I went there with Kenneth Mesher, the new Parliament, 1994, as I arrived there, the first thing that I noticed is all these beautiful oil painting pictures on the walls were gone. Lovely, massive, original oil and canvas paintings gone. This wooden paneled dining room had a cashier at the door, somebody perched on a bar stool, and money had to be exchanged before we were allowed in. And then when the Member of Parliament ordered drinks, the person came with the tray of drinks, and he literally took the money in one hand, counted it before putting it in his pocket before he put the drinks on the table. They didn't trust their own Members of Parliament to pay their bills. So that's how they deteriorated. They couldn't even trust a Member of Parliament to pay their bills. And this isn't just South Africa. In America, they had to close down. They once had a Congress bank. And because the congressmen didn't pay their bills, the bank went bankrupt, and they had to close down the Congress in the late 1980s because you couldn't trust congressmen to pay their bills with a congressional bank. And that is the problem. We've now got a situation where you used to be able to trust people and your children are safe in the community, but now you can't even trust your Members of Parliament. The local authorities should ensure that no liquor stores or sexually orientated businesses, which is a nice term, SOBs for brothels and porno parlors and whatever else. So you don't let any SOBs near schools or where children travel past. So that means you must re-establish local municipal police forces, which are drawn entirely from that local community concerned. Those police will not be standing by while their families' businesses are burned down and their communities are destroyed and torched, which we've seen. I mean, just remember recently how many police were standing by while just about everything is destroyed around them, because, you know, it doesn't affect them. They're not from this area anyway. The people who are known by the community and who know the community, they are the ones who must help to eradicate threats to the community. When you have your local police coming from that community, they'll recognize who don't belong and who are there just for crime. And it's very quickly for them to pick out the ones who are there just for nefarious purposes like child abuse and so on. And then Proverbs 23:10. Do not remove the ancient landmark. Do not enter the fields of the fatherless. These are biblical laws. We need to mobilize the whole community to take back their municipality. Community cleanup drives are needed, and sometimes it's been done. It's great. I've joined some of these where we've gone with community cleanups. Can't believe how much litter there is on the beaches of Sea Point, for example. And spend a Saturday morning picking up litter, cleaning up. The amount of styrofoam cups and Kentucky Fried Chicken and steers and other paraphernalia, fast food, littering the beach. You know, packets, styrofoam, plastic bags, and cigarette packs and cigarette stubs. Too much to be mentioned. Broken glasses, everything from whiskey bottles, beer bottles, wine bottles, and all the rest. And just the amount of junk on the beaches, but cleaning up the beaches. It's very therapeutic to get this done. I've walked around the common and with plastic gloves and plastic bag and filled up whole bags. just going halfway around the common. Got to go back for an extra bag. Just walking around the common, pick up all the litter you see in one go. It's not enough to have one bag. There's so much junk that people leave, and I've been doing this, and somebody's thrown a bottle out of a car window, and I picked it up and I threw it back through the window at the person concerned. Said, this is a nature sanctuary. Littering is illegal. I mean, it's a crime. And yet people just think they can throw bottles out of windows. And what happens to people and the dogs walking, and they've got to walk on broken glass and all the junk? The pollution, the grime. It's important to involve all residents, clubs, societies, community, in taking back their community. Mrs. Scarborough used to be good at taking control of the park that was just opposite her home. She used to walk up there with a walking stick and chase away the drug dealers and the pimps and the garbage that was invading this park that was meant to be for kids. And this one old lady, going into her 80s, chased away criminals and gangsters. They were afraid of her. And she took back the park for the local community. You know, you don't have to be somebody special to be able to reclaim your community. You've just got to be persistent. Churches and youth groups and women's groups and men's groups and cups and scouts and brownies and guides and rotary clubs and schools, businesses, consider standard by planting trees, bushes and flowers. We've got this regularly in our suburb where we go out and we adopt, we buy a tree and we plant a tree. I've planted trees in memory of my parents and my wife's parents and memory of my wife, and take out the whole family. We go and we dig the hole, we plant the tree and water it, and we go back regularly and care for our tree along the canal, beautifying our area. And there's schools that do projects, and there's also things, cleaning the canal and so on. Painting over graffiti, providing water bowls and fountains and public places for birds and pets, restoring the play parks, the jungle gyms and skate ramps for youth, undertaking neighborhood watch patrols, being good neighbors to those in need. We can all reclaim our communities. Isaiah 58 verse 12 says, those from among you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. The damage to monuments and museums and the environment throughout this country testifies to the cancer. And notice the middle letters of cancer is ANC. And the ANC is a cancer. And so I've been for over 10 years on social media referring to ANC by doing a small C, capital ANC, and a small ER. And people are speaking about the cancer government. It's picked up and been taken by many others on social media now. The cancer of crime, arson, nepotism, corruption, exploitation, and riotous behavior. This has been tolerated for far too long, and I hope that this criminal syndicate that's been running this country as a fake government will get kicked out by the voters in the next elections. One can only hope. To have voted for ANC once was unfortunate. To vote for ANC twice was stupid. To have voted for ANC 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times is absolute brainless imbecility or evil. And if anyone wants to do it for the 8th time, then they really are terminally insane. It's time to stop the looting and polluting of our communities. It's disturbing that more than half of the eligible voters don't bother to vote in either national or municipal elections. Do you know, more people are eligible to vote and haven't registered to vote, or are registered to vote but don't vote, than people who do vote. When you speak to many people, they say, what difference can I make? What difference can my one vote make? When more than half of the voters are saying they don't believe their vote can make a difference, there's something radically wrong. I know people. My own elder brother has never bothered to register to vote. I know people who are proud to say, I never voted in any election, and they think they're morally superior for being apathetic and uninvolved and doing nothing. And there's people who are absolutely proud of the fact that I've never voted or I've never registered to vote. Well, shame on them. First of all, you can't criticize the government if you've never even tried to vote in an election. I mean, what right do we have to complain if we never did anything to try and give support to those who do want to make a difference? We are told in the Bible, you shall appoint judges and officers in your gates, which the Lord your God gives you. According to your tribes, they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, nor shall you take a bribe. For a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. That's Deuteronomy 16. This is a lovely picture. It's a painting in the Palace of Justice in Lausanne, Switzerland. The title is Justice Lifts the Nations. And you can see the city fathers are looking to Lady Justice, And unlike the American Lady Justice, who's always blindfolded, in Europe, the Lady Justice have their eyes not blindfolded, they can see. Personally, I prefer the person wielding the sword to have their eyes wide open. I don't know why the Americans love the idea of a blindfolded justice, but normally, Lady Justice has the sword pointed upright. Always there's a scale of to weigh the evidence in one hand and the sword in the other. But in this one, Lady Justice is not only weighing the evidence in the scales, but pointing with a double-handed sword down to an open Bible. The sheriffs stand in front with their double-handed swords in front of them, while the people argue their cases, and the city fathers look to Lady Justice for the principles of justice. And justice lifts the nations. That's the name of the painting. And this is what the Chief Justice of Switzerland have to look at as they're on the way into the chambers. Beautiful picture. It just portrays biblical justice looks at the evidence and it operates in accordance with the principles of the Word of God. Righteousness exalts a nation. Sin is a reproach, a disgrace to any people. So we provide resources for reformation and transformation, and for 32 years we've been running Biblical Issues Voters Guides. We also did them in Zimbabwe and Namibia and Zambia. In Zimbabwe, after one election, the parliament passed a law forbidding voters' guides. Now, we were the only ones providing voters' guides, so they must have made a difference. And Mugabe's government banned them. Well, that voters' guide website got lost and taken down, and we no longer had access to that. So Warner's, in recent weeks, put together savotersguide.org.za. The previous one was just .org. And now we've put up new a chart which doesn't cover every single party. It's impossible. There's no page big enough or screen big enough to accommodate. We've got a lot of parties in the country. But we've got links on it to all the different parties and details. But just representative of some of the main parties, examples of where they stand, it's quite easy. The issues on the left side, and then if they are against these biblical principles, you give them a red X. If they are for these biblical principles, you give them a green tick. So, at a glance, you can quickly see which parties are more biblical, which parties are more free enterprise, which ones are antichrist and anti-biblical, and which are pro-life, which are pro-abort, which are for perversion, and which are not, and so on. So, these are Biblical Issues Voters Guides, very helpful. We've got the Biblical Principles for Africa book in English and Afrikaans and French. James 4, verse 17 says, "Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin." We often think of sin as sins of commission, doing bad things. But in Matthew 25, our Lord Jesus describes the day of judgment more in terms of sins of omission, good things we fail to do. You did not visit those in prison. You did not care for those who were sick. You didn't give water to the thirsty. You didn't give food to the hungry. You didn't give clothing to the naked. Depart from me, cursed, and lake of fire prepared for the devil and his angels. So our Lord Jesus describes the day of judgment primarily in terms of sins of omission, good things we fail to do. And I think it's seriously important for us not just to look for what bad things people do, but what good things are they doing or refusing to do. So what can we practically do to work for secession, independence, and freedom? Following the book of Nehemiah, we need to be informed, we need to be interceding, we need to be involved. That's what Nehemiah did to rebuild the walls. The very first steps to be taken towards secession, independence, and freedom requires us to be informed, to be interceding, and to be involved in being part of the solution in implementing biblical principles in all areas of life. We need to break free. First and foremost, if we want to be free and independent, then we need to systematically break free from the shackles that bind us. Do not be dependent on the state. Do not be in bondage to the banks. Do not be reliant on state structures. Do not be reliant on corrupt politicians or banksters or big pharma or big tech. Practical steps we can take for secession, independence, and freedom includes education, not indoctrination. Have you ever had the experience of trying to talk reason with a person who's got no books in his mind, he doesn't read, but he's got slogans, he's been brainwashed, indoctrinated in the media, and all he's got is a whole bunch of BLM and Antifa slogans, and he chants these communist slogans back to you, and you can't reason with him with facts. Well, this is because that person was indoctrinated. Education is teaching people how to think critically. Indoctrination is teaching people what to think. Well, we've got a lot of indoctrination today, we have very little education. So we need to secede from the state's indoctrination gulags. Ensure your children and grandchildren receive a real home-based education, not a state indoctrination. And if you don't have cats in your home, then you don't know what it is to have a real good education. Cats know how to train us. And so we've been investing in home education for decades. That's what we built Christian Liberty Books for, to provide home education resources. And Colossians 2 verse 8 says, "Beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the traditions of men, according to the basic principles of this world, and not according to Christ." There's a lot of people being deceived. We must be careful that our minds are not being deceived and that we are having a biblical worldview. We need entertainment, not exploitation. The amount of sick, sordid, defiling films out there, well, if you look at the amount of films that were made by the likes of perverts like Harvey Weinstein, who's a predator and a producer of a whole lot of films that have influenced people's culture and thinking. You know, when you've got cocaine-sniffing drug addicts, pedophiles and rapists making your films, don't be surprised when that's reflect their films. And to think people suddenly were shocked. Ah, Harvey Weinstein's a disgusting pervert. Well, all his films are disgusting. What makes you think the man is any different from the media he's producing? Secede from Hollywood exploitation and defilement industry. Why continue to allow cocaine-sniffing drug addicts and blaspheming antichrist pagans, pedophiles and predators, to exploit entertainment to defile us with their degrading degeneracy? And honestly, what do we expect? It's so important for us to switch it off, and I think one of the best decisions I ever made in my whole life, aside from responding to the evangelistic challenge when I stood up, went forward, and surrendered my life to Christ the 3rd of April 1977, was deciding with my wife we won't have television in our home, no TV. So we started our home back in 1989 when I got married, no TV. One of the best decisions ever made. I got accused by some people, you abused your child, your children were brought up without television, you retarded their education and development. Well, I asked my eldest daughter, did I think that? She said, no, Dad, goodness, you protected us. When she went to university, she couldn't believe how shallow and how stupid her flatmates were. She said, they didn't even know who Shakespeare was. They didn't know about Jane Austen. They didn't know about Charles Dickens. They just knew about the Spice Girls and a bunch of TV garbage. And she was just so glad that I protected her from TV, because she started to see what TV had done to the other girls that she went to university with. So secede from Hollywood. Whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on such things. Philippians 4 verse 8 gives us a standard for entertainment. And that means, in our home, that meant Handel's Messiah. It meant Charles Dickens, Jane Austen, Shakespeare. Excellence. I mean, why should we be looking at the vile garbage that Hollywood keeps trying to pull out on us? We need information, not disinformation. We don't need primetime propaganda. And we need to secede from the mainstream media, the lamestream media. Instead of distraction from the real issues and deception from Slime Magazine and Newspeak and Useless News and World Report and the Communist News Network, CNN, and the BBC's Bolshevik Broadcasting Network Corporation, the Sunday Crimes, and we should choose to rather support alternative news media, real news, instead of fake news. Instead of receiving disinformation and distraction from the mainstream media, we should support alternative Christian media, podcasts, websites, mailing lists, and social media platforms that reflect our values and our concerns. Romans 12 verse 2, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Notice, not the removal of your mind, the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. The good, acceptable, perfect will of God. We should test all things. We should make sure that we're not conforming to this world. We need gyms in the mind. We should invest in home education, build up a library of books, audiovisual resources, which include examples of excellence, and Bible-based solutions and a Christian worldview. When my children were small, I'd often take them to the library and they enjoyed picking books out of the library. But you know, it didn't take long and the library was selling all the good books and to make space for the communist garbage and junk and woke pervert stuff that they now fill their shelves with. I can't take my grandchildren to the library that I took my children to because it doesn't have those books anymore. You now need your own library. We can borrow from libraries like what we have at Livingston House. But to build up a good library of books, in fact, I think my children grew up in the library effectively at home after a while because we had to acquire books to bring them up so that they weren't being indoctrinated by the garbage in the world. The heart of him who has understanding seeks knowledge. You know, they say normal people have a big screen TV, but you should aim to have a big library. And we should develop self-sufficiency. Become self-reliant. Plant fruit trees. Having fruit trees in your garden is a wonderful way of being self-reliant. Cultivate a vegetable garden. Harvest rainwater from your roof. We started doing this already in 1994, putting up water tanks to harvest our rainwater. Long before it became popular during Cruella de Vil's water rationing in Cape Town. We should invest in a borehole if we've got the means, or solar panels, or generators, or windmill, especially people on farms. Build up a series of backups and alternatives so that in a time of crisis, your family can survive without relying on the corrupt and crumbling state structures, like ESHCOM, powers of darkness. A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. We need to be prepared. That was always the principle in Scouts. Be prepared. And be a good neighbor. We should build a strong community network of mutual support using bartering and cooperation within our own neighborhood. You know, it's wonderful when you can know a farmer and you know, they'll provide you with fresh fruit and vegetables and milk and so on, and you can maybe support them in other ways. It's so much better to support your friends and neighbors than to be supporting big companies and industries who are probably giving huge amounts of their profits as gifts to some political parties. Join the Neighborhood Watch, the Rotary Club, the Scouts, or other community groups. Be a faithful member of your local church and home Bible study and prayer fellowship, women's group and mother's group or men's group. When I was ministering in Eastern Europe, the people there said, we don't count our members by who attends a Sunday morning service. We count our members by who attend a midweek Bible study. I think that's the core. You get far more discipleship and far more serious work of discipleship happening in the midweek Bible study and prayer meeting than you do on the Sunday morning service. Both are important. But we shouldn't just be an adherent to a church. People who come on Sunday are an adherent. People who come to midweek meetings, they're more the members. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And we've got a lot of neighbors in the Cape that we can work together well with. And this also means we should develop self-defense skills. Be prepared. Take up a martial sport. I made sure that my boys went through fencing, and I did sword fighting, and taught all my children archery and target shooting. We aim to please. And also getting them into either boxing or karate or kickboxing. My sons did karate. My one daughter did kickboxing. My other artist daughter was too nice and gentle for that. But it does bother you when your daughter comes home one night with a black eye. I expect my sons to come home with a black eye, but once my daughter came home with a black eye, and I was outraged, who did that? And she, another girl at kickboxing. Well, nothing you could do about that. You know, judo. Do you know that James Kennedy was into judo? And he said that's what inspired evangelism explosion. He says, judo, you don't try and stop the assailant. You use his momentum against him to propel him into the wall of reality. And so he said that's what he did in EE, evangelism explosion, is take the biggest attacks from the worst anti-Christians out there and use their momentum against them, which is what he did in What If Jesus Had Never Been Born. He'd take the worst attacks on Christianity and then he'd take it to the facts. Well, that's interesting. What are the facts? Then he'd basically do a judo on them. And that's good evangelism, good apologetics, and it's good for defense as well. The Bible tells us, watch, stand fast in faith, be brave, be strong. And it's important that we aim to please. Join a group working for independence, of course. There's Cape Exit at this farm here just last week. Support groups working for self-determination, for secession, and for freedom. And there's the Cape Party, there's Cape Independence Action Group, Afroforum, Zuidlanders, and other groups are working for freedom. And we should register to vote. And we should vote intelligently for pro-independence parties and people we know as honorable candidates in upcoming elections. Exodus 18:21 commands us, moreover, you shall select from all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such of them to be rulers. Well, that kind of disqualifies almost everyone on the ballot, doesn't it? Capable people who fear God, who hate dishonest gain, men of truth, place them, appoint them as officials. Well, we should be prepared. And so we've written also the Security and Survival Handbook, which has a lot of practical recommendations to help us to survive in unstable times. But if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. 1 Timothy 5 verse 8 says, a person who doesn't provide for his family is worse than an unbeliever. Well, I'll put it more than that. I'd say a person who's not willing to protect their family is worse than an animal. What animal do you know who won't fight to protect their young? And we need to know our history. And so we've written some history books like Victorious Christians Who Changed the World, The Greatest Century Reformation, Greatest Century Missions, Sketches from South African History. When we know our history, we will be inspired by examples of excellence, and we'll be able to resist the guilt manipulators, the Stockholm Syndrome, guilt gaslighters, the psychological guilt attempts to corrupt and conquer, confuse, divide and conquer. The better we know our history, the better we will be able to prepare for the future. Now, all these things happened to them as examples, and they're written for our admonition. 1 Corinthians 10 makes it clear that history is valuable for all of us. And we need to secede. Secede from fake history, secede from fake news, from fake media, secede from fake schools and fake religions and fake economics and fake narratives and false prophets and corrupt politicians, from fake preachers and fake teachers, secede from the false and from the corrupt. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And we need to support the good, the constructive, the positive, and the true. Invest in your mind. Read and obtain all the training you can. Invest in your children and your grandchildren. Many people spend more money on their feet than they do on their brain. Just think how much money the average person spends on shoes. Now compare that with how much they spend on their mind in terms of books and education. So you could say most people put more money into their feet than they put into their brain. We need to invest in the mind. We need to invest in our children and our grandchildren. That's an investment in the future. By supporting Christian home-based education curriculums, that's one of the most strategic, important, influential steps for Reformation anyone could possibly take. Of all the decisions my wife and I made, I think not having television and deciding to homeschool are probably two of the most effective decisions we ever made for raising our children. Who all are living in South Africa. The amount of people I know whose children are all overseas. Our children not only living in South Africa, they're living in Cape Town. And not only that, but as of April last year, I had all of my children, all four of my children, all three of my grandchildren living in my home. And when you think how many other people have to go to Australia to see their children or their grandchildren. We need to ensure that the next generation receives the training, the information and the inspiration they need. We need to support organizations that are resisting the New World Order. Ensure that we are registered to vote. Be informed. Be inspired. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty by which Christ has made us free. Do not be entangled again by a yoke of bondage. Work together with other like-minded Christians, those who are committed to a free and independent Cape of Good Hope. We've produced audio-visual box sets on the case of Cape Independence. Free the Cape, Cape Exit. Those among you shall build up the world waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. Now the moment you try to do something like this, you'll get the Sanballats and Tobias of our day who have a gift of discouragement and a gift of criticism, ministry of criticism. The moment Nehemiah started to rebuild the walls, what happened? The people who came said it can't be done. They mocked him, they jeered, and they made false accusations against him. When God gives you something important to do, the devil will send people to try and discourage you, distract you, or defeat you. We need to smash cultural Marxism. Marxism wants to destroy our farms, our freedoms, our families, our fuel, our freedoms, our faith. Well, in the Cape of Good Hope, we have the opportunity to build a free and independent confederation of microstates. And the case has been put in the book, The Case for Secession, which at this moment is at the printer. We've got, at this moment, the website just been rebuilt. It was hacked and destroyed. CapeOfGoodHope.Africa is now back up and running, by God's grace. We've got this pull-up banner at the printer right now. And you can get a lot of things on the frontlinemissionsa.org website, but that includes the books that are available, history books, education resources, and...